This is Trainer Talk on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Presented by Fasig Tipton.
But it was all for Chuck McGee. Super Saver wins the Derby for Todd Fletcher.
The salt will give trainer Steve Asmussen career win number 6,000.
It was all have another for Doug O'Neill.
Oxbow and D-Wayne Lucas. Trainer D-Wayne Lucas, a sixth win.
And Al's Rosie is going to give trainer Gary Contessa his 2,000th career win.
And Dialed In never got to them. It was Animal Kingdom for Graham Motion.
Steve Hobby with career victory number 1,000 at Oaklawn.
Also sponsored by Winstar Farm. Now, here's Mike Penna.
Good afternoon once again, everyone, and welcome to Trainer Talk on the Horse Racing Radio Network. We do welcome everybody just joining us across the country on Sirius Channel 93. All of you who have been with us, well, on XM 209 for the past few hours, welcome back to the program. And, of course, everybody tuning in worldwide on our website, horseracingradio.net. Happy to have you on board for a legendary edition of this Trainer Talk show. Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, Jude Feld, the Pontiff of the Pick Four, our producer Lee Delapina. We are with you in our Lexington, Kentucky studios. And JT, we oftentimes get excited for this Trainer Talk show because our guests are always so engaging and so good. And this show here tonight, very, very special.
Yeah, well, King Leatherberry is a legend and one of the all-time greats. I believe he's the third winningest trainer of all time. Just outstanding record and a fantastic guy to boot. Great stories and amazing man.
Well, King Leatherberry is going to be with us for the first half of the show this evening. Bill Badgett Jr. will be with us for the second half, so we're not going to waste any time. We will get right to it for you here on Trainer Talk. And our first guest, King Leatherberry, he recently became an octogenarian on March 26th of this year, and over the course of his illustrious career has trained a total of 6,395 career winners with total purse earnings of nearly $61 million. On August 23rd, 2003, he became only the third trainer in history to win 6,000 races. He has recorded more than 50 Maryland training titles at Pimlico and Laurel and was the nation's leading trainer in 1976 and 1977. We do welcome trainer King Leatherberry to Trainer Talk tonight. King, welcome to the program.
My pleasure.
King, obviously a native of Baltimore, so much of what you've done throughout your career has been done right there in your home state of Maryland. How did this remarkable career begin for King Leatherberry?
Well, my father bred horses and owned horses on a small scale. And I graduated from the University of Maryland. And during that time, I mean, what interests me the most was horse racing. And quite frankly, I liked wagering. I liked the handicapping part where you tried to figure out who was going to win a race. That was like a challenge. And so then I spent 2 years in the Army. And during that time, I read as much and studied as much as I could about training horses. And then as soon as I got out of the Army, I just went right ahead and took over my father's horses. At that time, he had five. And started out with five horses down at Sunshine Park, which is now Florida Downs. And that was in 1959. And just as I started to do well and win some races, then you acquire other owners. And I just had one, basically built my stable up literally one horse at a time. At no time have I ever come into a whole stable where somebody's turned a stable of horses over to me. So basically it was just one at a time, and it just grew and grew until I got up to a sizable amount of horses. So we were clicking along, winning, and when you win, of course, it's the best advertisement in the world. So when you win, people will come to you, owners will come to you and ask them to train your horses.
When you're starting out like that from really ground zero, you don't really have many points of reference other than what you've read in books,
right,
and all of that. How did you make that transition from a business student to a horse trainer?
Well, it just came natural, really. I mean, I just went to college to go to college. My parents wanted me to go to college after I got out of high school. And at that time, I didn't know what I was doing. You know how it is, and or at least with me, I didn't know what I wanted to do. And by the time I got through college and the Army, then I just decided this was what I wanted to do. The horse trainers that my father had, I don't want to knock them, but I mean, I'm saying to myself, geez, if those guys can do it, I can do it. So I just dove right into it, and of course, and the mistakes I made, I learned from, and I took advice from people as I came along that were willing to help me, and it just grew, and I just came up from the, so to speak, from just scrapping it out on the bottom.
Well, King Leatherberry joining us here on Trainer Talk on the Horse Racing Radio Network. King, I mentioned nearly 6,400 career winners. Your very first, as you mentioned, coming in 1959 at Sunshine Park, which is now Tampa Bay Downs, with a horse by the name of Mr. L. What do you remember about that day all the way back in 59?
Yeah, that was my father's horse. I guess he named it after himself, Mr. Leatherberry. But, that was just some cheap horses he had that... He knew that I was green and didn't know too much, but he entrusted me with them. Of course, they were real cheap horses, which is the best way to learn. It's like driving a car, you know. You don't want to start out driving a Mercedes. You start out driving something that, if you mashed it up, it wouldn't cost that much.
Well said.
Well, you mentioned people were willing to help you along the way. Who are some of those trainers who took you into their ring?
Basically, of course, trainers are everybody for themselves in this game. I remember, that's a funny little story I tell, but when one of the first outside owners I had a horse, had an entry in the race. It was my new owner and my father's horse. And we were sitting at that buoy, in the box, and the horses came down. They were head and head. They both hit the wire together, and we went down the winner's circle, and I told him, I said, Dad, and I said, you know, I kind of hope the other horse beat you. He said, let me tell you something, son. In this game, it's everybody for themselves. So he ends up winning the photo, but I was kind of hoping to get my new owner to win, because I had my father as an owner. I didn't have to worry about him.
Well, Wayne Lucas says it's always good to be with the losing owner when that happens, because you can console him a little bit.
Right.
King, you mentioned Bowie, which is a name that many people, historians, certainly familiar with thoroughbred racing. Was that the first track that you started to go to the races and bet horses at?
Yes, it was close. And then we had a little half-mile track called Upper Marlboro, and we had like six or seven half-mile tracks in Maryland at the time. And Upper Marlboro was, and Bowie was where I was raised, right within maybe 10 miles of those places. So that's the fond memories of Bowie, which was really a unique kind of track. We had the first track north of Florida to have winter racing. Back when they started breaking into winter racing, and people would come down from New York. There was special trains coming from New York right into the back of the track. Back of the track had railroad tracks come right in it, and the trains would come right in there and empty. And another story was interesting. One of the trains wrecked on the way of about 2 miles from Bowie one time. And the fans literally got off of there and walked to the track, and some of them were bleeding, and they'd be standing in line buying their tickets with bloody shirts and torn jackets and everything from the wreck. But those are the kind of stories we got at Bowie.
Those are hardened race fans for sure.
That's a great game. King, when you look back throughout your career, what are some of the memories that are going to stick out to you?
You know what? And people always ask me, try to compare horses. And horses were different horses for different things. I mean, I had one horse, Fort Conway Lane, went 54 races. And he raced till he was 13 years old. And yet, then you have horses that were faster and better horses, but they didn't last as long. So it's the joy of winning, I think, is the main thing, whether it's a cheap race or a nice stake race. It's just something about winning. It's a thrill. And I still get that thrill after all this time.
Did you ever have a horse that you did like a lot of special work with that turned out pretty good that you're proud of? Not necessarily a famous horse or a fast horse, but some horse that was really kind of a difficulty as far as training was concerned or whatever, and you figured him out?
Well, yeah, it's just personal satisfaction you get out of that. And it's so many horses are a little bit different. A lot of them are you just do routine stuff. But some of them you have to dig down and try to find out what makes them tick. And so it's a personal satisfaction you get out of that.
King, you spent much of your career, the majority of it, as a claiming trainer in Maryland. I'm sure you've had opportunities or invitations in the past to maybe go to a larger circuit or train different types of horses. Talk about that decision to kind of remain with the claiming horses and remain in your home state of Maryland.
Well, that was one thing that I never was offered any. I had one guy offer me a stable, but he wanted me to give up all my other horses, which didn't make sense to do. But basically, I never got offered from any of the big-time trainers, I mean owners, rather. And that's because of the reputation of being a claiming trainer. And I've never had owners that really, I have had some wealthy owners, but none that would go down and buy the big yearlings, expensive yearlings or two-year-olds or anything. So basically, I've had to work with what I had. And the easiest horse to have is a claiming horse. And it's immediate action. You don't have to wait 2-3 years to get the horse there. So I was very successful at doing that. So I kept doing what I was good at and never really had the trainers that would go to Kentucky and you know, buy the expensive yearlings.
You've been so successful with claiming horses, and I know you know you're winning at over 20% clip right now at the age of 80 years old, so I don't want you to give away any trade secrets or anything, but what's your philosophy when you claim one? Is there any particular types of horses that you look for?
Well, yes. I mean, I'm basically looking for an improving horse, and a lot of times the horses take a while coming to their self. And if I can catch that, it's just almost like the stock market. You see something down that you think is going to go up in value, you grab it. But I'll look for horses that maybe should be running long, that the other trainer is sprinting, and horses that may be bred for the turf. I'm a firm believer of the breeding for turf ability. If I see something bred for the turf, it's never been on the turf, I'll take a shot at it. And if it works, then I get an improved horse. If it doesn't, then I got what I got. So I just deal with percentages and logic, basically.
Maryland trainer King Leatherberry joining us on Trainer Talk on the Horse Racing Radio Network. King, I mentioned that career began in 1959 with your first winner. Has the training game changed since the late 1950s?
Yes, it has, and people do things quite differently now than the old books. If you read some of those old books that was trained, you almost have to laugh at them. But things, of course, everything changes, and you have to kind of along change with it. I know the claiming game changed. When I first started claiming horses, people would get furious. I mean, really mad, fighting mad, if you claim their horse. Nowadays, it's part of the business. They realize that, you know, that's the game, and and they accept it. And many of my friends I claim from, and they'll see me at the track, buy me a drink, really. But I'll still claim a horse from them because they realize that's how the game goes. So that changed a lot. Back, if you had a breeder back in the older days, they would get... You claim a horse from them, it was like declaring war.
Have you had to change your philosophy on training horses since you first started?
Well, yeah, the purses are better now, and that makes you claiming horses philosophy better, easier rather, in that you can, you don't really have to get a horse that can win. Your purses are good enough. You know, your purses, if you can get a piece of it, second or third, you'll pay your bills, and that's all you want to do is, nobody wants to lose money, and most owners are so used to not making money that that's no big deal with them. It's just that they don't, if you can pay their expenses going along, then they can have a hobby, and they can have a form of recreation and the fun of going to the races without costing them any money.
What do you think now about the situation where you can claim a horse and drop it and make money? Do you think that's good for the game?
Well, it works both ways. We had that in Maryland for a long time, and just recently the racing commission has changed it. Now we got to step up 25%. So basically it stimulates claiming if you have the open claiming thing where you can run them anywhere. It makes you think twice about some of the horses that you claim if you got to raise them up for 25% for 30 days. It makes you think twice there. And it's probably better for the game in that if you claim a sore horse and you have to step him up, it's probably better for the game in that it's better for the horse. Where a lot of people claim a bad horse, they'll run them right back next week on the drop, which is the worst thing you can do is run a sore horse back quick. So from that standpoint, it's better to have the 25% raise.
King, that milestone win, number 6,000, came in 2003 when Cherokee Sunrise won at Timonium. Look back on that day and share your memories of that afternoon.
Well, it was that was a funny story, too. In that we expected to do it at Laurel, and we happened to hit a horrible slump. We just could not win. I mean, horses I'd send out there, they were even money. We'd get beat. And the cameramen followed me around for about 10 days at Laurel, and they're walking behind me. Every time I go to the paddock, they had signs made. They had all this stuff ready for the celebrate the 6,000 win. And I didn't do it. And we just went through the end of Laurel's meet. And here it was a big letdown for everybody. Then I go on over to Simonium, of course, I went over there. And they make a big deal out of it. But Laurel felt like they were hooked out of it, because Laurel's always been good to me, and they've promoted me, and they've done all kind of little deals and things for me, and so it was a shame that Laurel didn't get it. However, they did take advantage of it, because then when I got back to Laurel, they had some stuff for me, some gifts and a day where they celebrated my win. So it was a shame that Laurel didn't get it. But little old Timonium, which was appropriate because that's where I started out, around the Havers and the cheaper tracks. So that, you know, that was an exciting day. But it was more of a relief to get it over with than anything.
You see that with a lot of sports figures, too. Like, there are close to 2,000 hits or whatever, and they go into the worst slump. But do you think it was kind of the pressure you were feeling, or just one of those things?
I know. I met Joe DiMaggio one time at Laurel. He was up in the Sky Suite where I used to sit. And I met him, and they said, "What should we bet on?" I said, "Well, the trouble is I'm in a terrible slump now." And he said, "I know what that is."
Yeah, it's amazing the way that pressure builds. And then we've heard so many trainers and jockeys, when they reach that milestone, they describe it as a relief, just like you did.
No, it's amazing how that happens. You're rolling along, clicking, clicking, then you get to that one point, and then you just stall.
Yeah, Russell Bayes the other day, jocks were taking off and giving him their mounts so he could get to 12,000.
That's good.
Are you superstitious at all, King, with all the cameras around you and the signs and people having those made up ahead of time?
Yeah, that was pressure, but what could I do? I mean, I'm running horses just like I usually do, and they were getting beat. So that's something that you can, the bettors can use in their betting. I mean, when laws of averages get out of whack like that, and then you get a streak of wins, they come along the streak. That's one of my kind of the systems that I always use. If something doesn't happen for a long time that should happen, then when it does happen, it'll happen right along then for a while. So when somebody's in a slump, whether it's a rider or a trainer, and once he breaks that bad streak, then that's the time to jump on him.
King, I mentioned you were the nation's leading trainer in 1976 and 77. Looking back at your career, you've had so many high points. What points in your career, or maybe the point, would you consider to be the pinnacle of your entire career?
Well, that certainly was. But one of the strange things that happened, and it was a little bit sad because my father, who, of course, was a huge supporter of mine, and the year before I'm the leading trainer, during that year, he died. And so he never got to see me be leading trainer in the country. And the day that we buried him, it was absolutely amazing that I won 6 races that day. And I wasn't even at the track, of course, because I was at the, with my mother at the house after burying my dad. And I would call to see what my horses were doing. I'd call, it was at Laurel. I'd call, and they said, he won. I'd call back, he won. I called back, he won. It was 5 races I went at Laurel. And then I was running a horse, I think it was in Chicago. It was either Cleveland or Chicago. Forget now. And that darn thing won too. So it was almost like a something. I don't know what you'd call that, but to have 6 wins on the day I buried my dad was certainly something I'll never forget.
Yeah, very special. Maybe a little help from above. And when we look at the achievements and the honors that you've received, King, a Lifetime Achievement Award from the Maryland Athletic Hall of Fame in 2002, you were also enshrined in the Anne Arundel County Hall of Fame. And for all of your lofty numbers, just kind of curious, how on earth is King Leatherberry not in the Racing Hall of Fame, and does that bother you?
It doesn't bother me because it was explained to me, the head of the organization, the Hall of Fame people, his opinion is that you have to achieve that racing at the very top level. So that's his opinion, which I can understand that. It's two sides to that. So you could take other thing in consideration that I have to deal with horses that I've had to have, not ones I want to have, but ones that were came along. That's the other side of it, and so it's an argument on both sides, but I understand it. It doesn't bother me. God knows I've had enough awards for any person in a lifetime. It's just amazing. I've even had a thing down in Kentucky there that they gave me University of, what was it, Louisville?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I guess that guy at the Hall of Fame never saw Ben's cat running.
Yeah, well, Ken's cat, that probably would help me if I'd have nominated him to the Breeders' Cup, because I really think I could have could beat those horses. Some of the ones that's won it, I've beaten. So he's a remarkable horse, and but I just had never nominated him to the Breeders' Cup.
I can imagine he must be among your favorites, isn't he?
Well, yeah, he has to be at this stage. I mean, he just keeps winning. He's a remarkable horse. He just it's just amazing. Every time he wins, we all say amazing.
Well, King, it's been an absolute pleasure to visit with you and hear your story tonight on Trainer Talk, and I know our listeners certainly enjoyed it, and we can't thank you enough for taking the time and want to wish you all the best and continued success, and we're on the King Leatherberry for the Hall of Fame committee, so let's get that done.
Well, thank you very much. It's been my pleasure, and it's a lot of people that support me still to this day, people will tell me, and I had my people in the voting for me in the nominations, but like I say, I understand why I'm not, and it's okay. I've had my 15 minutes of fame about 1,000 times.
Well, King, like all of our guests who appear live on Trainer Talk, will receive gifts courtesy of EPO Equine and Flair Equine Nasal Strips. So, King, we'll get those to you, and we appreciate you being with us tonight. Thank you so much.
Been my pleasure. Thank you.
Wow. That's all I can say. Amazing.
Amazing.
Yeah, just like Ben's cat.
Yeah.
Incredible. King Leatherberry, a legend. And great to finally have him on Trainer Talk on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Stay tuned.
Celebrating 10 years of Eclipse award-winning coverage. Thank you for making HRRN your home for a decade of memories.
Make plans now to attend the Fasig Tipton Mid-Atlantic 2-Year-Old and Training Sale in Timonia, Maryland on May 18th and 19th. Current graduates include Bayern.
It's a rate for the ages. Bayern, Toast of New York, California Chrome. Bayern, Toast of New York. Bayern has won it.
Dortmund.
They're all chasing Dortmund, who's clear by 5 with a 16th to go. And Dortmund, another superb performance.
Materiality.
And Materiality is undefeated. He has won the Florida Derby.
And War Story.
Up to the first finish, it's War Story. War Story pulled clear to win by 3.
With 490 horses set to be offered this year, the Fasig Tipton Mid-Atlantic Sale is your chance to find your next graded stakes winner. Under tax shows taking place May 13th and 14th at 8 a.m., the sale beginning May 18th and 19th at 10 a.m. It's the Fasig Tipton Mid-Atlantic 2-Year-Old and Training Sale. Visit FasigTipton.com.
It all started with a dream. A dream to be the best. To breed the best. To race the best.
Super Saver Russell Meyer, what a finish to the classic.
And to stand the best. Windstar Farm. Dedicated to the dream.
And they're off to New York. The premier state-bred program in the United States. When you own a New York bred, your horse can run for more than $44 million in purses restricted to registered New York breds. And the New York program pays awards to breeders, owners, and stallion owners when their New York breds finish first, second, or third at New York tracks. We have the quality.
Day at the spa, all the way.
You have the opportunity. New York breds, get with the program. The best program.
From start to finish, the $500,000 Grade 3 Penn Mile is the biggest and most exciting race of the year in central Pennsylvania. This year's best 3-year-old grass horses will be at Penn National Saturday, May 30th for the 2015 Penn Mile. Last year's sensational winner, Bobby's Kitten, went on to win the $1 million Breeders' Cup Turf Sprint Championship. The Penn Mile program features more than $1 million in purses, and the All-Stakes Pick 4 starts with first race post time at 6 p.m.
Since 2006, the Permanently Disabled Jockeys Fund has provided critical financial assistance to some 60 riders who have sustained catastrophic on-track injuries. The lives of these former athletes who have given so much to the sport of horse racing have been changed forever. I'm Mike Penna, president of the Horse Racing Radio Network and proud supporter of the PDJF, and I ask you to join me in supporting this outstanding outstanding organization right now by texting the word jockey to 50555. You'll be credited with a $10 donation that can literally change the lives of those disabled riders who need it so much. It's quick, it's easy, and it's only $10. Who would think a simple $5 Xacta box would mean so much to so many? So let's all help make a huge difference in the lives of those riders who have given us so many great memories. Text the word jockey to 50555 today and visit pdjf.org to learn more. Message and data rates may apply. Terms mgive.org/chi.
This is the Horse Racing Radio Network, your home for racing's biggest events.
If you haven't already made the Horse Racing Radio Network your home for thoroughbred racing action, then now is the time to visit horseracingradio.net. Check out our broadcast schedule to see where and when we will be bringing you the best in thoroughbred racing from the rail to your radio. As always, you can listen to our free live streaming anywhere in the world at horseracingradio.net. Also, make sure to follow us on our Twitter page at twitter.com/HRRN or on our fan page on Facebook. We'll bring all the best racing information to you with broadcast information, pictures from the track, and news updates as soon as we hear it. Remember, that's twitter.com/HRRN for all the updates as soon as we hear them. Don't miss out on all the action. Get in the game with Horse Racing Radio Network today at horseracingradio.net. That's horseracingradio.net.
Hi, this is Steve Buttleman, the official bugler at Churchill Downs in the Kentucky Derby, and you're listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Welcome back to the show, Trainers Listen To, Trainer Talk, presented by Phasic Tipton here on the Horse Racing Radio Network, Sirius 220, XM 206, and of course streaming worldwide on your computer, smartphone, or your tablet at horseracingradio.net. Mike Penna, back with you once again, and looking forward to an exciting second half of the program, and I hope you enjoyed the first half with trainer King Leatherberry discussing his life and some of the most memorable moments from our Trainer Talk show, which we hosted with King back in 2013. It would be hard to top the memory of the moment he recently experienced when it was announced that the 82-year-old conditioner will be inducted into racing's Hall of Fame in Saratoga Springs later this year. So it is with great pleasure that I welcome back Hall of Fame trainer King T. Leatherberry to Trainer Talk tonight. And King, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much.
Well, congratulations, my friend. It's been a long time coming.
Well, I guess if you expected me to be on there, it was a long time, but it wasn't something I was counting on.
How does it feel to hear those words, Hall of Fame trainer King Leatherberry?
Well, you know, it's really quite an honor because it's the ultimate awards we can get in our industry. I have had so darn many awards, though, that I feel like any man that's gone through life and has got as many awards as I have is very fortunate and very lucky. And so this is the top of the line. But, I'm very fortunate.
Well, I can remember when you joined us on the program a couple of years ago, I asked you if it bothered you that you weren't already in the Hall of Fame, and you said no, because it was explained to you that the criteria is to achieve success at the highest level, so it didn't bother you necessarily. So let me ask you this. Did it come as a bit of a surprise this year?
Well, I had so many supporters, and everybody... So many of the sports writers and people that know me and horse trainers and management to different tracks would always say you belonged in there and all that. But it was a nice thing to say, but I didn't necessarily believe it. And so I was just content to be where I was. I had no big objective to attain that, you know, whatever. And that's what I've been my whole life. I've other than trying to win training titles along the way, I've just let things come as they came and let the things evolve.
Tell me about getting the phone call.
Yeah, well, I got the tip off. but I had kind of handicapped the thing, and I thought I had a good chance, but then again, I've run many a horse that I thought had a good chance, and they didn't win, so that didn't mean anything. What you think and what happens is not, a lot of times, not the same, but I was just figuring if once I got on the ballot, it's 4 out of the 10 got in. And there was 4 horses and 4 riders, so I'm figuring whoever voted is certainly not going to take all 4 horses or all 4 jocks. So you know, that left some room for them to squeeze a trainer in there. So I kind of was optimistic, although I wasn't saying anything.
Who made the call to you?
You know, it's embarrassing to me because I can't remember his name. When I got to the line, they identified themselves and they said they're from the awards thing and
Hall of Fame.
And they
sure.
said, "I just want to give you be the first one to congratulate you, and this is just a little tip off that you did make it." And they said later, then you mentioned somebody else would get back to me with the details. So that's the way it happened, and then I just sat tight and waited for the Monday to come.
So who was the first person that King Leatherberry called to tell about it?
Well, I think it's probably my son. I got 2 boys. They're twins, and one's in California. And he might have called me for some other reason, and I broke the news. I didn't want it getting out because I didn't know if I was supposed to. I assumed I was supposed to keep it a secret since the day of the official day of announcement was going to be on the 20th. So I think it was him, and then I eased it to one other friend I had at the track, and so that's where it went.
Well, when you joined me a couple of years ago, I can remember you had a great line as we were letting you go at the end of the program, and you said you had your 15 minutes of fame about 1,000 times.
Yeah, that's true. Well, that's the way I feel about it, because I'm very fortunate, and people in different industries, you know, maybe have their big day and attain their position, and So I certainly couldn't ask for anything more than I've had.
Well, now on August 7th in Saratoga Springs, you'll get to have your 15 minutes of fame one more time. Have you even begun to give any thought to your speech yet?
Yeah, because here's the thing. I've used my material around Maryland for so much that when I can go to a virgin territory, I mean a virgin ears, a territory with virgin ears, I can use some of my old stuff and that I can't use here in Maryland.
Well, King Leatherberry is well known for being a person who can tell some stories, and true stories as well, because you've experienced so much in the game. What's the number one story that King Leatherberry loves to tell?
You know, you spring a question like that on me. I don't know. things come up. What makes you think of stories is other stories or somebody, or just like a joke. You don't think of a certain joke until that particular subject comes up, and then it pops back in your mind. So it's hard to say. I've had, you know, many a thing, and just like people ask me about horses, what's your favorite horse and all that. Well, horses are all different, and some of them are not that fast, but they win a lot, and others are fast, but they don't remain sound. And then you have ones like Ben's Cat that's both fast and remain sound, and now he's a 9-year-old, and there's no reason why he shouldn't come back as a 10-year-old.
How much time, King, have you spent looking back on your career over the past few days since you received the news? Have you looked at maybe some of the horses, or reflected on some of the horses that got you there and some of the people that helped you?
Not really. I've always been well liked by the media. The media has always said nice things about me, and I knew I had a lot of support in that department. And so I don't want to sit and try to think of everybody to thank. Of course, everybody, every owner I've had, I have to thank. And everybody who's written about me, I have to thank. And then the management of the tracks, we've always got along well.
You know, I thought it was interesting. When you look back at the way you started and the way you built your stable, it was very much one horse at a time. You didn't have people that were giving you stables of horses, 20, 30
right.
horses at a time.
Absolutely. That's one of my – that's true story. That's literally built it one at a time. And what makes you do that is by winning. And once you start winning races, then it's owners that never knew you before – want to join with a winner, and especially when you're leading trainer in different areas, they want to jump on the boat there, and so that brings in horses, and the more horses you have, more opportunities you have to win.
Well, I know you said earlier that you never really expected that this would be happening to you, but considering the way that you built your stable and your business from the ground up, King, is there a part of you that feels an even greater sense of accomplishment because you essentially did this all on your own from the ground up?
Yeah, in a way, but I don't want to, you know, brag on anything like that. But no, it does, and of course, I got my start with my father owning horses. Had he never bred or owned horses, I probably wouldn't have been introduced to the game. Although I've always liked to gamble. And of course, that was one of the legal forms of gambling in Maryland, and so that might have attracted me to it eventually. But I got a head start by him taking me to the races when I was in grammar school, actually, and getting the atmosphere of the track, and I kind of fell in love with it.
Yeah, I loved your story when you talked about your dad and when you first started with him, and he would start you with cheaper horses so that you wouldn't mess up the good car, so to speak.
Oh, yeah.
He was a huge supporter of yours, King, but he died the year before you became leading trainer in the United States.
And the day, this is amazing, the day we buried him, I was back at the house. I kept getting calls. I ran five horses at Laurel that day. All five of them won. And I ran a horse out in, I believe it was out in Illinois, in Chicago, in a stake, and that won. So we won six races that day, and it was absolutely almost like, you know, it was eerie in a way that would happen.
What do you think your dad would say if he could be there to watch you inducted into the Hall of Fame?
Well, he was very proud right from the beginning. And, tremendous pride in that.
King Leatherberry here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Forevermore, he will be known as Hall of Fame trainer King Leatherberry.
Yeah.
King, you told the story of your 6,000th career winner and the slump that you hit just before achieving that mark. How about the other milestones, 1 through 5? Do you remember those days vividly?
Yeah, well, I have... In fact, yeah, I didn't pay much attention to the first couple of them. I know my 4,000th win, I have that picture at home. Actually, an agent of the rider, Delgado, he's still riding, incidentally. Albert Delgado's agent, we happened to win the 4,000th win. He had me a painting made of the horse winning and presented to me just as a gift. And I still have that hanging up in my office.
Wow.
The 4,000th win. And then the 5,000th win, we had a huge party and invited all my owners and everything. Even some of them from New York came down. And it was a place outside of Baltimore that had this big party in recognition of that. And then the 6,000th win, my wife had a big party at my house in the backyard with tents and stuff like that.
Did you have any kind of a slump before you got to 4,000 or 5,000?
Yeah, you always hit a slump. You always hit a slump before you get to a certain number. And it's just like the 6,000s, right? 5,999, I stayed on forever. And every horse I ran at Laurel, I had the cameras following me and the reporters following me. And it's just day after day that went on, running favorites and getting beat and getting beat. And of course, finally it came, but it just seemed like it was wearing everybody out. Everybody's getting tired of it. It had little signs already made, you know, to hold up once I would win it. But it just seems like that's what happens. You hit these slumps.
You know, it's amazing when you think back and you think of the number, 6,450-plus winners that you saddled, King. It's remarkable. Fourth most in the history of thoroughbred racing. And you probably were the last person when you first started that ever thought that this was going to happen to you.
Oh, of course. I wasn't even thinking of that. I mean, that was a matter of surviving in this game and just to get a winner. Was something which you keep track of. I didn't really start keeping track of it until we would get in these trainer races. In Maryland, we had the media called the Big Four, John Tamara, Dickie Dutrow, Buddy Delph, and me. And we were the big stables that would compete against each other. And it wasn't a race go by every day that we didn't have a horse or two in. And so the media made a big thing over that. And it was a competition between us that I think made all four of us better trainers.
You know, you had a quote that I thought summed up King Leatherberry perfectly. It was in the Baltimore Sun when you said, "I'm just fortunate to be around this long and last this long because most of the people I started out with are no longer here."
Exactly. Like just the four, just with the three others I just mentioned all gone.
Yeah. Yeah, it's amazing. And you think about all of the things that you've been able to accomplish. How do you view yourself in the sport now, King?
I'm the same. There's a lot of good trainers, especially in Maryland here. I've come up with the competition we have here. Oh, it's many, many trainers that are excellent, very competent trainers. And if you're just fortunate enough to last and live as long as I have and have some people that are willing to have the horses, if you need trainers, need horses to train in order to win races, and slowly you kind of drift down like I am now. At my heyday, I used to have 60 horses. I'm down to 14, and because most of my owners, well, all of them practically, have either died or gone out of business, and so we're just hanging on with a few guys that are still in the game with me, and so. But that's what happens when you get old, and you don't expect a new guy coming in the business to grab an old guy ready to die. So you expect him to get an up and coming young trainer so he can build and grow with. And so that leaves me out.
So what still motivates you to come to the barn every morning and get up and do this 365 days a year?
Well, that's what I like to do. I don't look at it as work. It's just like a hobby. And I don't know what else to do if I didn't do that.
Do you ever get many of the younger people that are getting involved with training horses? Do they ever come to you and ask for any kind of advice?
Not really. Most people are so funny about horsemen. Everybody kind of, I've never met a horseman yet that didn't think he knew everything there was about a horse. So some go on and do good, and some drop by the wayside.
What's the number one piece of advice that you would give to a young person today?
Well, you got to like what you're doing and just not get in it to think you're going to make a whole lot of money. You just want to get in it because you want to enjoy what you're doing and get by at the same time.
You know, I thought it was great when it wasn't just King Leatherberry going into the Hall of Fame this year. Extra Heat is also going to be inducted, and she was a sensational race mare. And she started her career I couldn't believe it, King. It was actually a maiden claiming race at Laurel and then went on to so much success. So I know that she's very much, like you, considered to be a Maryland icon.
Well, it's funny because we just had a press conference at Pimlico the other morning, and the morning that the news broke, and then the owner was there, and just him and I were sitting there, both Marylanders, and I started Ben's Cat out in the same kind of race, made in 20,000, and so one of the sports writers brought that up. Both of us could have lost those horses right off the bat had we been unlucky, but it wasn't unlucky. It's a fact that at that stage when we ran them for that, and nobody had any reason to claim them because nobody knew what they were.
Ben's Cat has been a true hero for you. What has he meant to you and to your career?
Oh my, he's kept me alive. He's kept me alive in the game these last 5 or 6 years. Without him, I don't think I would have got the award.
You know, I thought it was very interesting that when you look at your record, a lot of people will immediately think King Leatherberry, the claiming trainer. But King, when you walk back through some of those graded stakes wins, you know, the cupboard's not bare. I mean, you look at the Grade One Hempstead in 87 with Catatonic. That's just one of several big races that you've won at the top level.
Yeah, you're right, but I still have a reputation to be a claiming trainer because that's where I won most of my races and acquired most of my horses. Because, as you mentioned, I never had a breeder other than Mr. Marriott. He bred horses, and I'd always get 5 or 6 from him every year. But other than that, my owners acquired their horses through the claiming game.
If you were able to turn back the clock and go back to the beginning when you first started and started working with your dad, and knowing what you know now, is there anything that you would have done differently?
No. I just, you know, I never really had a plan. And maybe it's the wrong message to some people, but I didn't have a sit down with a plan of a big objective and everything. My main thing was when I got in is just to survive and let things evolve as they came.
And you've done it better than anybody, and you'll be rewarded for that patience and for that vision this summer in Saratoga. How many times have you been to Saratoga, King?
I think only a couple times. The amazing thing about Saratoga is, and I've told this story, I was stabled at Delaware Park one time, and the racing secretary at Saratoga called the racing secretary at Delaware, who was Larry Money at the time, and then he said, "You know this guy Leatherberry?" I said, "Yeah, sure." He said, "Well, he probably doesn't know it, but in his barn, he had claimed a while back, he'd claimed this horse that used to be a jumper." And he said, "You know, would he be interested in running in the steeplechase race we have up here?" And so Bundy got me, and I said, "Certainly, I'll put her in." So I think it was him. But I put him in and put him on a van, sent him on up there. And it was a 6-horse field. Lo and behold, he wins the steeplechase race. So I quit the steeplechase game batting 1,000.
You can't walk away with a better percentage than that.
Yeah.
If you're going to go out on top.
No, that was weird, and I didn't know the horse had jumped before, but of course the secretary was on the ball, and he was scouting around, I guess, to try to fill that race, and he happened to see the horse down here at Delaware, so we went up there, and so it's some steeplechase friends I have, and I tell them that story, they can't believe it. So we're going to have to look that up. We can't believe that story.
Ever since you were a young man, the joy of winning a horse race, whether it was betting on them or training them, has always been the key component to making King Leatherberry go and to making your interest in the sport what it is today. Is that right?
That's correct.
So tell me about the thrill that you get even today when you're saddling a horse that, I'm not even talking about Ben's Cat, say a race that's a claiming race.
Yeah, just a 5,000 claimer. No, I still get a thrill. It's a tremendous thrill you get. I remember training a horse for Mr. Cohen. He was my brother, the guy who used to own the Cohens that used to own Pimlico. And he had never had a horse before. He got a horse, gave it to me, and he won. And he's walking around, and he said, you know, I'm walking on air.
Yeah. Yeah, there's nothing like it. I've always said that if you could take that feeling and you could bottle that and market it to people to let them know what that's like when you actually win a horse race, this sport would be thriving, King.
Yeah, well, that I've always sold the game like that. I said, you don't have, you know, somebody that owns a football team or a baseball team, you know, it takes hundreds of millions of dollars to have something like that going. But you can get a similar thrill out of just a $10,000 racehorse.
No, there's no doubt about it. King Leatherberry here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network. King, 6,454 wins to date. You've won 52 training titles in Maryland, 4 in Delaware, led all trainers in North America by wins twice in the late 1970s. When you think back, what's the one thing you're most proud of?
No, winning races. Winning races. Just that's what I feel like I'm known for. And just over the years, accumulating that number of wins. It's just, I don't know how I did it. I look back. I mean, right now, it's just life and death for me to win, because I got 3 wins here at Pimlico because I got off to a good start. But I look back on the days when I used to win 5 races in one day, and I shake my head. I look at some of the pictures winning. They did a horse win by 8 lanes, 6 lanes, 4 lanes. I said, how did that happen? It's inconceivable now.
Well, now you're going to have a plaque in Saratoga Springs. People will be able to read about King Leatherberry forever. How do you want the sport to remember King Leatherberry?
Just by winning races, won a lot of races.
Yeah, and a class act as well, King. I want to thank you for always being so accommodating with your time. And again, congratulations on a well-deserved honor, and can't wait to see you in Saratoga in August.
I thank you very much.
All right, thanks, my friend. King Leatherberry,
bye-bye.
Hall of Famer here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Trainer Talk presented by Fasig Tipton. Wow, something special. You think about King Leatherberry and the way that he has conducted himself from day one. And you heard him talk about never really having a plan. He never truly did. He just loved to win races. And even when I asked him what he's most proud of, that's always a question that gets a multitude of answers from various trainers. He said winning races. And how better to sum up what King Leatherberry is all about than with that one statement? Winning races. That is all he's ever wanted to do. And now, finally, after all of these years and all of these victories, more than 6,400, he is now going to get his due. And he's going to get that respect of being enshrined into the Hall of Fame in Saratoga Springs. Of course, we are going to be there to provide the coverage of King Leatherberry's speech and all the speeches. We'll have live coverage of the entire Hall of Fame inductions for you here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. That's August 7th. And I cannot wait to hear King speak. When I asked him about his speech earlier in that interview, I really didn't expect him to say, yes, I've already started thinking about it. But I guess you do. I guess when you get that kind of news, it's one of the first things you do, because you want to make sure you're prepared. And he's probably going to go through a million different stories and different things that he's been part of over the years between now and August. And he's going to think about those moments. And when he gets up there, all of those stories are going to come flowing out, all of those emotions. And it's going to be remarkable. One of the classiest guys that you're ever going to meet is trainer King Leatherberry, and I can't thank him enough. I really hope you enjoyed that first half of the program with King talking about growing up around his dad and his dad being a huge supporter, and then talking about being in the Army and everything that happened after that, and then, of course, taking you all the way through to the current time here in the second half, King Leatherberry Part 2 on Trainer Talk presented by Fasig Tipton. Don't forget, you can catch us every single Wednesday night, 6 to 7 Eastern Time, Sirius 220, XM 206. And if you did miss any portion of this show, go to our website, horseracingradio.net. A podcast is available on the site and on iTunes, and it will all be there. the entire King Leatherberry story all in one show. Been a lot of fun, and really want to thank King for all of his generosity for coming on this program. Like all of our guests who appear on the program, who receive a gift courtesy of Flair Equine Nasal Strip. So we'll get those out to King Leatherberry. And can't wait for next time. For Lee Delapina, I'm Mike Penna. We'll talk to you then.